Hello, everybody, and welcome to Connectivity, episode 320. I'm your returning host, Neil Ronahan, back a little bit. My house is almost in order. I'm not on vacation anymore. I did get to hang out with Alex DeFreitas between the last time we recorded, leaving John all by himself. But
leaving it was nice me to meet edit.
Alex. Yeah. Hi, yeah. Alex. I know you're editing this. I'm sad that we're not hanging out on a Thursday night and you're editing this instead.
But you weren't sad when you were hanging out with him and I was editing this.
No, I had a great time. I got to see him, former NWR editor Mitchell Parton. We got some tacos. It was a good hang. And you know what's great? We didn't go to PAX East because there's a bunch of COVID happening at PAX East.
Yeah, it was bound to happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's the kind of thing where I'm not shocked and my heart goes out to the people that went. But it proves all of my concerns about going to PAX East this year, right?
Yeah.
I hope that everybody who went either didn't get COVID, or if they do, they're fine.
Yeah, I do know of some people who went who I have not heard of having COVID yet.
Yeah, there's a few. Kalafi went. I actually reached out to him when I saw that there were a lot more positive cases, and he was just like, I was only there as long as I had to be, and I was double masked the whole time, so I'm not concerned. So good for you, Kalafi. So I actually did, in my time away, I spent it reviewing Nintendo Switch Sports.
Yes.
Which, I guess technically I reviewed it. I don't know. It was funny. I was talking to NWR Zach Miller about Switch Sports, and he told me today that he enjoyed my preview.
That's
kind of what it is. For people who don't know, or people when this is horribly dated, because by the time this comes out, like, Switch Sports will be out.
Right. Yeah, we record on Wednesdays. Friendly reminder.
Yeah. Review copies went out for Switch Sports, and the online wasn't accessible. So one of the things that I would call out as a huge red flag of Switch Sports, which otherwise is a super, super fun game, it is extremely online focused. So when you boot up the game, you have three options. There's, you know, play online, or like play globally, I think might be the phrasing. Play with friends online or play locally. You can only play locally right now. That'll change by the time it comes out. You'll be able to play online. Don't worry. I hope.
This could age poorly. Theoretically.
But playing locally, you can just play the games. For most of them, there's only a single mode, which no kind of customization. So like, if you're playing volleyball or badminton, I hope you like playing to five. And that's it. Like, there's just no customization there. And I kept on kind of looking for it, because even with bowling, it's something that personally does not bother me. But I remember during the event that we can't talk about, aka the Switch Sports beta test thing the other month.
That never happened.
It never happened. But when you bowl in this game, you have to like hold down the trigger button the whole way through. Back on Wii Sports, you would just hold down the button, and like when you would release the ball, you would let go of the button. They added that as a toggle, and I think it was Wii Sports Club is when they added it as a toggle. There is no option to switch between that by default, and it's the only option, as far as I can tell. You have to hold down that trigger button to bowl the whole way through, which, once again, to me doesn't bug me. It's just the lack of options
kind of
weirds me out.
It almost makes it seem like you want to say that the offline experience ought to be roughly comparable to what Wii Sports was, but in some ways it's not quite there.
So the ways in that it's not quite there, if you're looking at like a raw comparison of like Wii Sports offline versus Switch Sports offline, there's no progression. So you can still play the games, and like I've had a lot of fun playing badminton, playing sword fighting. But even sword fight or Chambara, with the equivalent of sword fighting from Wii Sports Resort. And Wii Sports Resort, if you remember, and it wasn't like they were like these fully fleshed out deep modes, but you had the one-on-one matches. You also had like the speed slicing. And then there was like the janky horde mode thing.
Mm-hmm.
In Switch Sports, it's just one-on-one sword fighting. That's the only mode for Chambara.
Oh.
And it's fun. Don't get me wrong. But I was kind of taken aback by just how limited the offline experience was. And there is no progression in the sense in that, if you remember from the original Wii Sports, when you would like bowl, let's say you're just bowling by yourself offline, as you continue to like get higher scores, I think it like goes up from like 0 to 1,000 or something like that. You would go up, and once you hit that threshold, you get like a gold bowling ball. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I'm not acting here like, oh, that's a game changer. It's right. amazing. But it was like something to kind of do by yourself. But this game doesn't have that. That seems to be all online. Not to horrendously subtweet people who scored the game. And I saw positives for some of these as far as online multiplayer and progression. If you played it, that's amazing. You must be a time traveler. But I have my doubts, just kind of looking at what Nintendo has presented for what the online multiplayer and progression is going to be. There's just aspects of it that I hope that I sound like a fool and the online is just crazy awesome. But like,
yeah,
this ain't my first time around the block with a Nintendo online right. game. We're going to talk about Splatoon 3 a little bit. You could have told me what Salmon Run was before Splatoon 2, and I'd be like, that sounds incredible. And then like the game came out and they're like, psych, it's only available on Tuesdays from 3 to 5. And I would be like, what the hell, guys? That's terrible.
Well, and that's like, there's like basic functionality questions that you can't trust Nintendo to do with online. And then there's also just like, will the online work at all?
Yeah.
Is also a valid question for any online Nintendo game.
From the event in which I cannot acknowledge that I participated in.
That's not canon.
I've got decent faith that I think the online will work. I do. I mean, with bowling, I don't really have much concerns just because it is like such like a low latency. Like you don't.
It's like asymmetric.
Yeah. Like you're basically playing with yourself and other people are going at the same time.
So is Mario Golf. And yet.
Yeah, that is true. But like soccer is the one that I'm curious to see how the online will perform, because that's mm-hmm. that's a Twitch based, fast paced game that if the online like lags at all, like that's going to be miserable. It's going to ruin yeah. what is like the 4-on-4 soccer is. Maybe that and bowling are my two things I'm looking forward to the most playing online. If that soccer game plays with any kind of lag, that's going to go downhill very fast.
Yeah. Sword fighting, I imagine, would be the same way.
Yeah. Although in the event that cannot be mentioned, it was fine.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, like it could just be fine. But that's why there's no score on my review right now, because yeah. I don't know if it'll be fine or not.
Yeah, we don't have the sheer confidence in Nintendo that I guess some places do to provide yeah. a flawless online experience.
And it is also like, guys, Chocobo GP was like a month ago. Come on. What did we learn when they handed out the game like 2 weeks before launch and were like, guess what? The embargo is a week before the game comes out.
Yeah.
When's the online going to be
please
active?
Stop paying attention by the time yeah. the game comes out.
Which is, I mean, I didn't do like a, I also didn't really do like a full audit of Switch Sports reviews either, but I didn't do it with Chocobo GP. But I do remember when that review embargo went up a week before Chocobo GP came out, there were a lot of people being like, this game's great. Like the single player is funny. And like, honestly, like the single player right. is my favorite part of the game.
It's not that they're wrong about what they were able yeah. to cover, but
then there's just the dystopian future of that game, of the fact that like, oh, by the way, you need to either spend 75 hours or $60 to unlock Cloud.
Yeah. Like,
that's not great, guys. I don't think Switch Sports will be doing that, but we'll see how kind of like long of a tail the online has, how much stuff there is to unlock. But yeah, there's almost literally, actually, I feel pretty confident saying there is absolutely nothing to unlock offline.
That's weird that yeah. that all of that is exclusively online. I get having like certain things for online, but it's just between that and some of the like the fact that golf isn't in there yet, it isn't coming to a fall, and there's like updates for soccer and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, do you get the impression that maybe this game isn't as done as it would normally be?
So there's something that I've I guess insidery rumory things. But I've kind of heard this thing with Nintendo recently, is that with some games that they kind of sit on, it's because they want to build out a post-launch roadmap. Because if you do look like historically, yeah. I mean Breath of the Wild might actually be one of the ones that kind of came out at a better cadence, but like Breath of the Wild came out in March. They had like the first DLC pack was what, June? The second one was December. Smash Brothers, mm-hmm. what, it took them like 4 years to get through yeah. the DLC that they planned. Granted, they did have a second season and stuff, but like I think they kind of want to minimize the time between when the game comes out and when the DLC comes out. So I think you run it, it could be the case with Switch Sports that, and I would not be surprised, like let's say Switch Sports was like could have probably been released last year, but then any extra development time to build out golf, build out any extra modes, because, I mean, we don't know for sure, but maybe there will be more to Switch Sports than just golf and just the leg strap soccer edition. They could just be building out a more like a consistent cadence of content coming out. Like, that's why Splatoon 3, which we'll talk about a little later, with, I guess it's technically not a delay, because it's still out.
It never
summer.
Had a date. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was summer 2022. Okay. But technically September 9th is summer, so Nintendo gets the last laugh. But I have a feeling when Xenoblade moved up 2 months, I think it was because Splatoon moved back 2 months.
Yeah, I wonder what its old release date was.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if maybe Splatoon 3 probably could have come out in July, but maybe they were like, oh, actually, like, we're not going to have post-launch content that it wouldn't be ready until, you know, 4 months later or whatever, and we want to kind of have it be like the 2 months after launch or something like that.
Well, and I don't think I would ever assume that Nintendo is looking at Halo as a comparison for Splatoon, but when you do have an online multiplayer game like that, there is an expectation of a pretty consistent drip feed of content, and that's something that Halo's been wrestling with, and Nintendo may not be looking directly at that, but to avoid a similar situation.
It's still similar problems, even if they might not all be drawing from the same source.
Right. Yeah, I just assume that Nintendo is never in any point looking at an American game.
Yeah, they're probably just like, Halo, what's that?
Right. What's an Xbox? Is that like
Master
a GameCube?
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot that I like about Switch Sports. I could see a world where the online knocks my pants off.
Yeah.
And it becomes one of my favorite games of the year. If not, it's, I guess, for better or worse, has already become a local multiplayer staple in my house. My 3-year-old is slowly but surely getting a little bit better at the different modes. At first, I was going easy on him and sword fighting. He still doesn't really get the concept of blocking, so I have that against him. But then, like, there was one time we were playing, I'm like, oh no, he's actually, like, timing these things well and getting around me.
Has he played Skyward Sword?
No, well, he has, but what do you mean play? Like progress?
Okay.
No. Mess around with?
I guess I mean, has he done any of the sword fighting in Skyward Sword? Because I wonder if the skills would translate.
I would be curious because, yeah, there is. I mean, actually, the more that I think about that, like, yes, like that is, it's, I mean, it's the motion that they, it's probably
right.
The same
there's
Joy-Con
a direct
motion that they use for Skyward Sword HD they're using for Switch Sports.
Yeah, I know there was a direct line between Wii Sports Resort and Skyward Sword. I'm assuming there's a direct line here.
Yeah, outside of the online stuff, very positive on Switch Sports. It just, the online seems to be like 75% of the game.
Right.
I've also been reviewing two other games that I'll kind of go over in less detail. Bugsnax, out on Switch. Quirky, weird PlayStation PC game that came out in 2020. Now on Switch, alongside a big content update, The Isle of Big Snacks. It's from Young Horses, who's the developer of Octodad, which came out on Wii U and is out on Switch. I love that game. It is hilarious and weird and fun.
Yeah.
Bugsnax is kind of reminiscent in it as far as the vibe. The actual gameplay of Bugsnax, I actually did see something where I think a developer said it was kind of inspired by Pokemon Snap. And that was something that I was playing it and was like, this kind of reminds me of Pokemon Snap. Where it's from a first person perspective and you are going around basically trying to like help these different characters with their problems. It's all, there's a lot of quests, but the quests will be like, can you go catch this specific bug snack and feed them to me? Because when people are fed bug snacks, then like their limbs turn into a fruit.
Yes, obviously.
It's weird. But the writing was kind of what took me by surprise in this game, in that the voice acting is great, the writing is hilarious, and the story takes a lot of twists and turns that I wasn't necessarily expecting. If any of what I said is engaging to you, go check it out. It seems like the Switch port. I don't have a direct comparison of what other versions look like or run. We will likely have something showing you that probably over the weekend. But like it ran fine. The load times are a little long, but other than that, like I had no issues with the visuals.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep. And then the last one, Parkasaurus. I think it was mentioned in an Indie World last year.
I don't remember hearing anything about this game.
I think it was just in like a, whatchamacallit, one of the montages. But it stuck out to me because I have a three-year-old who likes dinosaurs a lot. And this is basically like a dinosaur tycoon game. And it is at least more approachable than Jurassic World Evolution to me. One, because it's just not a, it's not like a an HD game crammed into a Switch and barely running. It is, I think it's like a two-person developer or something like that. But it's a really cute like dinosaur theme park simulator. There's also a good sandbox mode where you can basically like turn off everything and just make yourself a bunch of dinosaurs in a park. which that is the mode that I have played with my son the most. I've been working my way through kind of like the missions and campaign that they have, but it scratches an itch that I usually don't need scratched as often. Like I played a lot of like Roller Coaster Tycoon and stuff when I was a kid, mm-hmm. But have not really gotten into any of those recently. But it's just that whole thing of like, oh, you're setting up an exhibit, then you're trying to, you know, balance like how much you're charging for tickets, making sure the park's clean, people are happy and stuff like that. It's cute.
And it controls pretty well on Switch, because that's always my issue with that kind of game on consoles.
It's a little cumbersome, but like they kind of, it's almost like the Mario Maker stuff, which I thought was kind of fine, where it is like you will have like that kind of basic view. But then you like hit the Y button and like something will fly in from the left and have a bunch of menus show up. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be more cumbersome than it is. I do have the occasional moment where I'm like, where the hell is this? But that's not necessarily an interface thing. That's just, it's a complex game.
Okay. Yeah. This seems like something that I would be interested in, assume, as long as it, you know, plays well on the platform.
Yeah.
Cause it could be hard to find good games like that.
Because of Switch Sports and Bugsnax, I still got a lot more Parkasaurus to play before I finish the review.
Sure.
But it's definitely like unless it takes a dark turn, is a cute little game.
I would love if it took a dark turn.
As a twist, actually.
All the dinosaurs are loose. It's now a first person shooter. It's Turok. It's
Turok. But yeah, that's what I've been reviewing. I've also been playing a lot of Nobody Saves the World. That game is incredible. I forgot how good Drinkbox Studios is. Because I never played that much Guacamelee 2. I don't really know why, because I did love the first one.
Yeah.
And like all the other stuff, like Mutant Blobs Attack, Severed, all really good. But Nobody Saves the World is kind of like, I mean, it's like they made a Zelda game. But the trick with it is that there's all these different forms that your character can transform into. So you are a nobody, which is just like this bizarre looking soulless husk, and you go through this pretty sizable overworld, you know, collecting whatever MacGuffins, and then also just kind of exploring the world. There's a lot of like kind of random dungeons that you can go through, or not randomized as in like it's not necessarily like story driven.
Yeah.
And you unlock these different forms, which like there's stuff like knight and ranger, and then there's also horse or turtle or ghost, and they all have like unique power sets. And then as you kind of level up and get through the game, then you can kind of like have their powers combine. So like there's a rat form that you have. It's the first one that you get, actually, that has like a poison, like all of his attacks do poison. Then you can, at a certain point, you can then make anybody's attacks do poison just by like having the rat buff equipped on them. And unless there's a lot of fun mixing and matching, I think there's like four forms that I don't have unlocked. It looks like I still have a lot more game to go. I think I've put like 7 or 8 hours into it, but it's super, super fun. And after I get through this wave of review games, I'm probably going to go back to that.
Cool. That's on Game Pass too, right?
Yes. Yeah. Cause it launched on Xbox. It was like a, you know, timed exclusive.
Okay.
And I think they added online co-op. I don't know if it's cross-platform. I don't think it is.
Okay. Interesting. Bugsnax is on Xbox Game Pass as well, right?
Yeah. It will be. Because that's another one that is timed exclusive on PlayStation. It is now coming to Xbox and Switch. April 28th is when that comes out. So that'll be
okay,
that
so
will
it'll,
be on
it'll
Game
be
Pass.
Out by the time you're listening to this.
Yeah, by the time you're listening to this, Bugsnax and Nobody Saves the World will both be on Game Pass.
Okay, cool.
Parkasaurus, hopefully it will. That'd be cool if it went to Game Pass. I think Parkasaurus might only be coming out on like Switch and PC right now. I'm not totally sure.
Weird combo.
I mean, I think it's more that like, oh wait, we can put this on Switch too.
Yeah, it just seems like that's the one that would require the most effort.
Yeah. I mean, it usually does. Like, that was one of the things with Bugsnax, is that they did like a preview of it before they announced the Switch and the Xbox version. And like, there was the programmer at Young Horses, like, was like, yeah, I had to figure out how the Switch worked. Cause like, doing the PlayStation to Xbox is pretty easy. It's basically the same architecture. Mm-hmm. But the Switch is just like a unique chipset compared to the other consoles and,
right.
and
yeah,
PCs and stuff.
You're essentially porting it to a cell phone from 2014.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
and it was the interesting thing that he pointed out that like when they ported Octodad to Switch, it was very easy because they had a mobile version already. So it was just like mm-hmm. taking that, adding in buttons and kind of optimizing it. Yeah. Whereas the Switch port of Bugsnax required a lot more like from the ground up work.
Yeah. I don't know how video games work, but I would assume the Switch is a pain in the butt to port to.
Yeah. That's why there are a lot of companies that make their bank porting things to Switch.
Yes.
Like Chrome Studios. I don't know. Did they?
Whoa,
they
used a to transition.
They used to be a port house. I know. I have not heard that. That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
So the Force Unleashed review came out a while ago. But I kind of just want to talk a little bit about this port. Because while I don't think it's a great game, I think it's a really good port. And then B, there have been some comments in the comments section for the video review that question my interpretation of Darth Vader's character and his motivations. And I need to correct some folks. And I hope Ryan's listening so that he can back me up on my Star Wars or totally disagree with me and be like, no, they were right.
Ryan, but I come guess on maybe, to either agree or disagree as soon as you can.
Yeah. I guess maybe like a spoiler warning for this game from 2008, in case you haven't played it. It's not canon, so it doesn't matter. But to start with, the one thing I did just want to highlight that I thought was cool about this particular port of the Wii version, which is an enhanced version of the PS2 version, which was designed to run on the PSP of The Force Unleashed, is that it was ported to Switch by the studio that originally developed it for PSP, PS2, and Wii, which I just thought was really cool and not something that I've really seen Aspyr do, like outsource their ports. It's usually the case that they only port games to Switch that have an existing PC version, which has the side effect of the Switch version sometimes being technically worse than the console versions of the time the game originally came out, like Republic Commando
PC was. Ports checkered past.
Yes, so it's a little rough. So this was the first time that they've ported a console Star Wars game, because even like Star Wars Racer, that has a PC port.
Yeah.
Like and all
KOTOR has a
KOTOR.
Yeah.
And KOTOR, I think with that one, they actually based it on
the mobile
a mobile version. Port.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that explains some of the weirdly scaled UI stuff that they've now patched. But this is the first time they've done one from a console. I will also point out, Rogue Squadron has a PC port. So Aspyr, you have literally no excuse. It's a terrible port, but it exists.
Yeah, Rogue Leader. Rogue Leader does not.
Although, that does
did
not.
You, did you see coming out of that?
Yes.
I mean, Julian Egbrecht, who I mean, he was before my time when he was more active in the world of Nintendo. I think, for lack of a better term, he's a bit of a blowhard. but he like so it's the guy who headed up Factor 5 for people who you know weren't paying attention to Nintendo a lot in the early 2000s. Factor 5 was the company that made Rogue Squadron, Rogue Leader, Rebel Strike, closely worked with Nintendo at the time, and then wound up like defecting. They did Lair on PS3 and then kind of faded into irrelevancy and or bankruptcy. But they're still like, I think it's something where like part of it, like that.
Do legally still exist.
Yeah.
Like they're not gone.
But because they Turrican. They did Turrican as well, which has shown up. It shows up every now and then. But he like so there's like I don't even think this is rumor. I think it's just fact that there was like a Rogue Squadron trilogy that was in development on Wii that was essentially done. And Julian Egbrecht was like, yo, guys, let's do this. So we'll see if that happens. Yeah. I would love that, because when it comes to like Star Wars games that I want to see Aspyr make or not make, but bring back. I mean, they got KOTOR 1. I would imagine KOTOR 2 will follow eventually.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And then those three Rogue Squadron games, even if like Rebel Strike is kind of garbage, just give me all three if you're going to do it. And then also Shadows of the Empire, just as a side note.
Which also has a PC port.
Yeah. Which, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how bad that PC port is, but
that one's okay. It has pre-rendered like 3D cutscenes with voice acting.
Oh.
And they suck, but it's awesome.
yeah, give me that PC port. I want to see that the weird cutscenes.
Yeah, I actually played through that a while back, and it's pretty good.
But back to The Force Unleashed and your issues with the plot.
Yes. So in The Force Unleashed, you play as Starkiller, whose name is not Starkiller in The Force Unleashed. I don't think that shows up until The Force Unleashed 2. I think he's just Darth Vader's secret apprentice is how he is credited. And the whole plot of that game is that Darth Vader recruited you in secret because he wants you to help him kill the Emperor so you can take over. The problem with this plot point is that it implies that Darth Vader, the entire time he was Darth Vader, this is like a few years, like this is soon after he becomes Darth Vader. The whole time he was Darth Vader, it implies that he was always looking to overthrow the Emperor. Which then means that in episode 6, when he finally does, that's not about him going, I need to save my son. It's about him saying, cool, a chance. He's distracted. Let's
it's my
get it.
Moment.
Right. So I pointed that out in the review and said that while I like most of the Force Unleashed story, I think that that one plot point diminishes Darth Vader's character. There's also additional plot points in that both the Force Unleashed and Force Unleashed 2 that the fact that Starkiller, the character you play as, is easily more powerful than Darth Vader and the Emperor, and yet he is a throwaway character.
Yep.
Feels weird, but like that's another thing. So what people have used to counter this argument is that in episode 3, on Mustafar, Anakin tells Padme that he's more powerful than the Emperor and he could overthrow him. And so like, see, he's always wanted to do it. The problem is that he said that to Padme because he could see that he was losing her and wanted to keep her on his side. Because Anakin, as a character, is entirely based on the idea of losing people that he cares about. He loses his mom. As soon as he gets Qui-Gon as a father figure, he loses him. And when he is on Mustafar, he has three people that care about him. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Padme, and Palpatine. Kenobi turns against him. Padme turns against him. And so he's desperately trying to hang on to Padme, but he doesn't. And so at the end of that, the only person that Anakin still has that he thinks cares about him is Palpatine. And so there is no way Anakin is turning against Palpatine because he doesn't dislike Palpatine. He thinks of Palpatine as his father. Like at no point is he actually considering this.
Yeah. Yeah, like I 100% agreement with you. Like that is definitely I remember when The Force Unleashed came out and being like, this seems weird. And to me, like, I guess it technically was a part of the EU and like, you know, quote unquote,
it was
canonical.
Canon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to me,
it explains like how the Rebel Alliance forms. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of like a key piece of canon.
To me, it always felt like an Elseworlds tale. That was also a time period where I didn't care as much about Star Wars. I'm kind of back there now. It's great. but like, yeah, no, like that never really sat well with me either. It just seemed like an excuse to have cool force powers in a video game.
And that part works great.
Yeah, and it seems like this version of the game, like I did see some people talking about it, that like this is actually like the more complete story, so to speak, because
I don't know that I agree with those. Well, so it's more complete in that it includes what was cut out to be DLC from the 360 version, which is hilarious that like it was because this came out the same day as the 360 version. And so it's so obvious that like they had the full game and purposefully cut stuff out of the other versions.
Yeah.
But then on the Wii, they were like, well, we can't sell it separately.
Yeah.
So they just left it in, which is aggressive. But the Wii version and the PS2 and PSP also have like some truncated cutscenes as compared to the 360 and PS3 version. So I don't know that I would say it's like the complete story version, but it is a version. And like, once again, I don't think this game is great, but I will say I enjoyed this port more than I thought I would. And a lot of that is just that it is a flawless port. Like, Chrome Studios did an incredible job.
That's good to hear.
It's rare that I play a Star Wars game on Switch that runs at 1080p 60 frames per second with just not a hitch the whole way through. So that was cool.
So going back to some of the Star Wars lore talk. So at the end of Revenge of the Sith, you made the point about how Anakin has three people that he cares about, and he loses two of them, and he has Palpatine. And granted, the movie was not made with this in mind, but it has been retrofitted. In that moment, when he is both on the verge of not being Anakin Skywalker and is his early days as Darth Vader, does he care about Ahsoka, or did he already lose her?
I don't know if he thinks she's alive
until Rebels.
Yes, because even at the end of Clone Wars, spoilers for Clone Wars, Anakin becomes Darth Vader. Yeah. He shows up and finds what appears to be her grave along with Rex's. I know the Empire thinks Rex is. Yes. Okay. So in the Ahsoka book, just called Ahsoka, she gives her lightsabers to Rex to bury.
Okay.
So the Empire thinks that, like, I think Rex even may turn them in. Like, I think the Empire thinks that she's dead.
Yeah. Until then, Rebels season two, when, this is also some Star Wars spoiler stuff.
You guys should watch all these shows.
Yeah.
They're great.
It's pretty good stuff. At some point I'll probably do a rewatch of Rebels. Cause that was a binge heavy show for me.
It's easy when they're 20 minutes long.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's the kind of thing where I think I got halfway through season two and there were a couple moments where I'm like, oh, this is great. Like would be like, all right, I'm just going to watch like half of the season tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like until then, that's when Ahsoka and Anakin kind of meet again.
Yeah. Well, that's when Ahsoka finds out who he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Ahsoka doesn't know.
Yeah. Just knows that Vader's a bad guy. Does not know that it's Anakin until that point.
Yeah.
And then there's,
it's so good.
And then Ahsoka gets to meet Luke. And like, that's a special moment. And she references Anakin. And
it's great.
Who cares if Luke Skywalker looks like a zombie
man?
For
some reason, it's in the middle of Boba Fett in an episode that doesn't have Boba Fett. But like, whatever, who cares? Yeah.
When that Ahsoka show comes out in 2028, I'm pretty excited.
Right.
But yeah, it's Star Wars stuff. I feel like we always talk about this because, I mean, I think since we started this new run of the show, we've had like five old Star Wars games get ported to Switch or something.
It's been, Aspyr is prolific, and for all of like the problems with their ports, like I ain't giving them back.
They exist.
I played like through all of them.
Guess what? You know what's better than no KOTOR? A mediocre port of KOTOR.
Yep. Yeah, I'll take it.
I've played like a half an hour of that port, but it also doesn't help that like I played like 15 hours of the PC version. I think the last time I kind of touched it might have been when Last Jedi came out. Because that's just, that is, KOTOR is the game that I'm like, I'm fiending for some Star Wars. Let me go just like sit in this world for like 12 hours. That is the game that I go to usually. But what do we think would be like, let's say, Nintendo Direct in September, the Aspyr is announcing a new Star Wars port. What do we think it's going
to
be?
I'm trying to do, so if I prevent myself from doing Rogue Squadron, because I feel like that's the easy one.
Yeah, Rogue Squadron, they either had that interview response.
Because they've teased it.
It's either they are actually gauging interest or they're like, it's already in the works and they're trying to get people to be, talking about it online, which got me.
I want Star Wars Dark Forces.
That would rule.
Yeah, it was the PC, PS1. I think it was the Doom engine. It comes before Jedi Outcast and Jedi Academy, and it's great. I also, replaying it, realized that like it was a huge influence on Shadows of the Empire. Shez the Empire really just feels like third person Dark Forces.
Yeah.
They even reuse like all of the random grunts of Dash Rendar are from Dark Forces. So, yeah, just a really solid first like 90s FPS, which I love anyway. And if it can be Star Wars, thank you.
I feel like one. I mean, yeah, Rogue Squadron is, if you were to ask me what one I want, what one yeah. I think will happen. I'm torn between Force Unleashed 2 or KOTOR 2. I'll do the one that I would want more, which is I think KOTOR 2 will get, you know, will come out before the end of the year.
Is there a mobile port of KOTOR 2?
I believe, actually, yes. Yeah, yeah. I'm on okay. a list of, I just Googled, I'm on the Wikipedia page for a list of Star Wars video games, just to glance to see if there was anything I was missing. There is a mobile port of that.
And I think they're already working on that.
Force Unleashed 2 might have also been, was that Chrome do? Oh, the Wii version of Force Unleashed 2 was by Redfly Studio. And then Aspyr ported it to Windows. Okay, so that's the version that they'll use.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, unless they just want to bring Chrome Studio in to do all of their...
Yeah.
All of their Wii ports.
I mean, maybe.
They don't seem busy.
They're just doing the Tasmanian Tiger ports.
Yeah. Bring them in.
All right, so... That's our Star Wars breakdown. Get ready for our, I don't know, I think we have two guests for Obi-Wan already.
Who do we have?
And then there's going to be a Star Trek episode at some point in which I will leave. And it'll just be John and my friends and Johnny Metz.
I need to dig in and see if Star Wars or Star Trek is still trying to sell me NFTs immediately, like a week after putting out an episode about how we destroyed the world in the 2000s. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. It's like, guys, you made an episode about this last week. Calm down, watch the show.
So speaking of the world coming to an end and Squid Kids taking over, Splatoon 3 is coming out September 9th. It's kind of on the show last week, you and Alex basically pontificated on the fact that Xenoblade got moved up because Splatoon 3 was probably coming out when Xenoblade was going to come out. Which... Well,
I think we were both concerned that it was going to be Advance Wars and that they were going to release it on September 11th.
Oh, no, no.
Because that was a possibility. That possibility existed.
Yeah. Or no, I think it came out.
I think the first one was like September. Yeah, it was like the day before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either way.
So yeah, Splatoon 3 coming out September 9th. This is something that I have seen this discussion online a lot more, and I'm curious to see where you're at. I have seen a lot of people not really give that much of a shit about Splatoon 3. How do you feel? What's your hype level for it?
I want to see more of the single player.
Yeah.
Because like the multiplayer for Splatoon, like I think Splatoon is a fantastic game. Like conceptually, it's not always executed the best for the online. But if they can give me like Salmon Run anytime I want, that's my main ask for the multiplayer. And then, you know, like new maps, great. But I don't see a whole lot of like reinvention of how the multiplayer works. If the single player can be something a bit less vague Mario Galaxy, go through all these levels that all kind of look the same and have no real sense of place, then I'm in. I feel like there's a lot of room for Splatoon to do more with their single player, especially if they're not going to change up their multiplayer that much.
I feel like also with the single player and from the little bit that they've shown, because they have not shown anything specifically from the single player other than just, that kind of like
they had the tone teaser. Setting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But who knows how representative that is of what that is.
If they just like do like, I'm not saying it needs to be like Breath of the Wild open world, but if they just make it like a little bit like Bowser's Fury, if it is like Bowser's Fury, but Splatoon. And I think from the fact that like it's like the Splatlands, like you can make that very Mad Max ish.
Sure.
Have where the multiplayer matches are going on, like that's Thunderdome.
Yeah.
Like that would be. I mean, and I don't even think that's that much of a stretch from what they've shown of the game. Like that kind of looks like a little bit of the setup. Could draw some inspiration from that, but make it like you can still have a like similar gameplay because I do view the single player and I think it's effective as this as. Almost like training for the multiplayer. It's training you on the controls.
Yes,
and it's a little deeper than that. It's a little deeper than that.
Yeah. we're three games in at this point.
Yeah.
And like I need it to treat me like I know how to play Splatoon.
Yeah.
And give me some like there's so much lore in Splatoon that they refuse to tell me. Like give me a single player that has like a sense of place and progression where like I'm in the world and not just in these weird voids.
Yeah.
Like let me feel like I have a mission that I'm going on that makes sense and that I'm moving through the world. It doesn't have to be open. It can totally still be level based. I just want you to present it to me in a way that isn't just a series of challenge stages.
Yeah, my demands are simple. It is I want Bowser's Fury, but that's Splatoon 3.
Yeah, and I think the game has a crazy traversal system, so you give me a wide environment to explore and that can work.
Yeah, yeah. And multiplayer wise, I think where I settle on with Splatoon is I think the first one was a degree of right place, right time. Not that that's going to be the peak of the series, but I think like for people who actually played Wii U, you know, mm-hmm. all 12 of us,
yep.
we had a great time playing Splatoon because it was like for that summer, it was the only thing to play.
Yeah.
And like it was a really good time. And I noticed that with Splatoon 2. And I always need to keep in mind, too, that part of the reason why I fell off Splatoon 2 was my Switch died in August of 2017. I reviewed Splatoon 2, so I enjoyed it. I played a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And when my Switch died, I lost my like 50 hours or whatever I put into Splatoon 2 and never really had like I put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to play that game a lot. I did wind up like I think I just like kind of power leveled so that way I could play some ranked games because I played online with like Ryan Grove and Scott Thompson and stuff. We had like a while where we'd play Splatoon online together and I had a lot of fun with it, but I never got as deep into it as I did the first one. And I think I'm definitely going to get Splatoon 3. By nature of, you know, owning Nintendo World Report, I feel like I have to.
Right.
But even still, like I'm looking forward to playing it. I don't think I quite have the fervor that I had after the first one, but if the single player is something special, that'll excite me a lot. And I hope that whatever they do with Salmon Run, it's just a little bit less. I don't know what the right term is, like bullshitty.
Let me play it.
Yeah. After a while, I kind of, you know, you do like see the schedule and you're like, OK, like, all right, guys, we're going to like get on tonight and play Salmon Run. But like, it's still like weird to do that. I'm not even bothered by the stages being like there's only two stages at a time because I can kind of understand that from just keeping pace of game, having playlists like that.
And I don't need that. I'm somebody who's still playing Halo Infinite, which famously hasn't had any stage updates since day one, and I'm having a great time. So I can work with a limited number of stages. I just need you to allow me to play the game.
Yeah.
That's my biggest thing.
Yep.
Is having a schedule for when I'm allowed to play this game that I paid for is dumb.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be how that works.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to seeing that they're definitely going to roll out the marketing campaign for this. Splatoon 3, I think, might be like one of Nintendo's biggest franchises in Japan right now. And it's not like it's lagging in America. It's still a pretty big deal here too.
It will be interesting because this is their only big multiplayer game that will have a second release on the same platform.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's that, you know, Smash Bros, Mario Kart, ARMS.
Yeah.
That's a once per generation game. So for Splatoon 3 to be hitting again on Switch,
I still
is a little strange.
The biggest mystery, what the hell is that Mario Kart team doing?
I don't know, like, making more levels for Tour.
Yeah, yeah.
And then porting them to Switch in a way that
because they made ARMS in 2017. The DLC ended for that game a year after that. Yabuki has, as far as I can tell, does not have a name credited to him since 2018.
They're working on legs.
Yeah. Feet.
Honestly, just give the ARMS team a Punch-Out game.
Yeah.
It's that I wish. Yeah, I like ARMS. It should
ARMS feels like lost potential just because that was another one where you're like, what is this lore? And you're like, oh, none of it is in the game.
Yep. Well, and also throw Little Mac in there. Like it's, we make fun of Miyamoto for like picking up a game and being like, this is Star Fox now.
Yeah.
And you can't stop me.
Or make it like Tellarabox a reference, man.
Yeah. I kind of feel like somebody could have picked up ARMS and gone, we have some people who punch, and just like given it some of that like classic Nintendo appeal as opposed to an entirely new.
Yeah.
Franchise.
I think the bummer with ARMS is that like, I think I want to play ARMS 2 more than I would. Than I wanted to play Splatoon 2.
I would be very interested in ARMS 2. Yeah,
because I feel like there was a lot of, like, I feel like Splatoon 1 was a more polished product when it came out. And then Splatoon 2 was kind of like,
ARMS is?
Yeah, then ARMS was at launch. And I see a lot of potential in ARMS, and I do really love, like, the controls and the concept of it and everything. But then it just felt like that it was like way more of like, oh, we just made a fighting game as opposed to like, here's some weird cross genre nonsense.
Yeah, they did nail the online, though.
Yeah.
Like ARMS has one of my favorite Nintendo lobby systems.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Do we have any? I'm a little bummed that the Mario movie got delayed. It was supposed to come out holiday this year, December this year. It is now coming out in April, April 7th.
I'll be honest. I, on an hourly basis, forget that the Mario movie exists.
They haven't done a lot to remind you that it
exists.
And
so, at the beginning, they were like, we're making a movie. And then 20 years later, they were like, Chris Pratt's in it.
Yeah.
And then, like, 20 years after that, they were like, it's delayed.
Yep.
So, I have no, I'm like, okay, I don't care.
I'm going to go to that and see that movie with my child. Like that.
Yeah. Oh, I'll go at midnight.
I am like, stoked for it. Like, I will be like, kid, I don't give a crap that you're 4 years old. We are going at midnight. I am giving you cake beforehand. This is going to be a disaster. And I'm so excited.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, yeah, I'll go to it. I'll have a great time. It'll probably be terrible. But like, and then you never know. I went into Sonic the Hedgehog being like, this is going to be my favorite disaster ever. And got out going, that was kind of good, actually.
Yeah, and then the world ended. So,
yes.
What does that mean?
Damn it, Sonic. I give you one thing, and you take the world.
Did you see Sonic 2?
No, my nephews did, and they said it was great, and then desperately tried to avoid spoiling it for me, while also trying to explain the entire movie to me.
Yeah, I'm probably, like, I'll likely, I think it's coming to Paramount. Yeah, it's a Paramount movie.
Yeah,
whenever it comes to Paramount Plus, that might be when I mean maybe a little line with our Star Trek episode,
maybe,
and I'll watch some
and
Star Trek
just
stuff.
Sit quietly and
I'll sit quietly and watch Star Trek while you guys talk about Star Trek.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I heard Sonic 2 was fun. Like, that's really, it's like, and I think it's a little bit of like having a child has made me like reconsider how I view like children's movies, is that like the goal is not like, I don't honestly, it'd be cool if like, oh, this Mario movie's actually like wonderful and subversive and like better than like the best Toy Story movie. Like, that'd be really neat if that was the case. That is not going to be the case.
No.
I just want something that is amusing to watch and not like an affront on humanity.
Well, and you have a kid who likes Mario, so like, good or bad, you're going to watch it a lot.
Yep.
So hopefully it isn't painful.
I could be preparing for Stockholm Syndrome. It is the kind of thing that like, I needed to be amusing, like amusing and not like something that makes me want to die. That is all I ask out of the Mario movie.
Yeah.
And I outside of Pratt, I think the casting's really good. Like, yeah. Anya Taylor-Joy is Peach is perfect. Like,
yeah.
Jack
Charlie
Black
Day
is Bowser.
Luigi is like the most like chaotic neutral choice I've ever heard.
And then
I love it.
Seth Rogen is Donkey Kong with the rumors that they're going to make a Donkey Kong movie next. Like, that is, yes, stoner Donkey Kong is exactly what I would hope for.
But also maybe stop making Nintendo movies of the Nintendo properties that don't have plots or characters. God damn it. Like, Metroid, you have Star Fox, you have F-Zero. Like, there's stuff right there that has characters with arcs.
And I think the thing that fascinates me the most with this movie is, like, we still don't know what it is. We have no idea what this movie is.
No, which I don't know if that... Because I feel like with most Illumination movies, you get an ad that is simultaneously feels way too early, and then the next time you think about the movie, it's, like, already out on home video. Like, it's it's weird how nothing we've heard about this movie, given that studio's ability. Like, I assume they've made a trilogy of movies by now, and Miyamoto's just been rejecting them. Like, they don't pitch movies. They just like, here's a finished movie. Do you like this one? And Miyamoto's like, nope. And they're like, no problem. We'll try again. See you in a month.
I think it's also the case in that I think that Nintendo is incredibly hands-on with this. Like, I mean, I think it's relatively, like, Miyamoto was heavily involved with this movie. Yes.
Which probably means that, like, they're not allowed to, like, put hats on any of the bombs.
They can't put stories in the
thing. Yeah. Yeah.
And everything is stickers for some reason.
Yeah. It comes out and it's just a movie version of Color Splash.
I do love, like, I started following, because there's like a Twitter account that's like the Paper Mario E3 2010 demo, which I stumbled upon because we have footage online of Paper Mario before it was what would eventually become Sticker Star. But it's just every now and then it'll just like post something that just makes me really sad, because it'll just be like a quote from Tanabe being like, yeah, we were going to do this. And then Miyamoto told us no. And I just think of how like Sticker Star is one of those special games, and that like I was excited for it. And then I played it and I was like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah. I didn't even think it was that objectively bad.
I think if I wasn't looking forward to it, I'd probably be more neutral on it, but I was looking forward to it and I hated it. So, man, that game. But every other Paper Mario game is pretty good except for Thousand Year Door.
Wonder if Sticker Star is actually any worse than Color Splash, or if it's just your perspective.
I don't think so. Because I think I had to think about it. I'll give it a thought. I still will stand by the music and the visuals in Sticker Star.
Oh, yeah. It looks they're great. I've played it in a waking dream. And it looked very, very good.
But the thing that I think Color Splash does better is it doesn't gate you with specific items as much.
Yeah, I guess I only remember it because, isn't Sticker Star pretty straightforward level based? Like whatever item you need is pretty much always in that level.
Yeah, but then I think and this is something that I noticed with Origami King. Being the Paper Mario game that I've played the most recently. Well, I did play a little bit of Paper Mario 64. But Origami King is that there is a certain point in that game where I just realized I didn't have to do the battles at set of story. And sometimes I would just be like, oh no, I just kind of want to get to the next story beat. I'm going to just avoid everything except for mandatory battles and do that. And I think the thing with that is Sticker Star's battles are like extremely pointless, as opposed to Color Splash and Origami King's being like, a little bit less pointless, but less, I don't know, like less pointless, but also less relevant. Whereas I think Sticker Star, so much of the game is like, do you do the battles and there's some puzzles and that's kind of it. Whereas like Color Splash and to a much bigger extent, Origami King, like Origami King is basically an adventure game that I occasionally do RPG battles. Like that's the way I look at it. And I think that Sticker Star does not land that balance as well, for some of the reasons that Miyamoto upended the tea table, in that the story isn't really present and the writing isn't allowed to shine. So much of that game is focused on go through these, you know, relatively straightforward levels, make sure you have whatever like realistic fan you need and avoid the battles because there's no reason to have them.
Yeah.
Some of the specific details, Sticker Star stands. I know there's a few of you, call me out if I'm wrong.
In some Sticker Star emails about your pro Sticker Star opinions.
I mean, I am open to having my mind changed. I will probably never play the game again. But if you write a compelling enough defense of Sticker Star, I might just like nod and be like, all right, maybe I'll stop dunking on it.
I mean, in like year 20 of the Switch, when it's still the best selling console in the world, we'll eventually get to the point where we're porting Sticker Star to Switch.
Yeah.
So like you might.
And they will still never port Thousand Year Door.
Nope, Thousand Year Door and Xenoblade X. Those will not be on there.
Which, to clarify my twirling remark, I do like Thousand Year Door. I don't think it's as good as everybody else. It's the second or third best Paper Mario game.
And the worst selling.
Now, I think it might be the worst. The N64
one. I assume Color Splash is probably the worst selling.
Yeah, no, Color Splash totally is. I think Sticker Star and Super Paper Mario might be it. I know Origami King did numbers, but it didn't do it did like dependably good Switch numbers, not like, oh, this is now a core franchise.
Yeah, I know I saw a lot of talk around Origami King from like previous Paper Mario fans kind of like begrudgingly going, all right, this one's okay, I guess.
Yeah.
I would call that a victory within that fan base.
Origami King is probably one of my favorite Switch games. It is so damn good.
That and Luigi's Mansion are continuously games that I'm like, I want to play those. I'm never going to play them.
Yeah, maybe Luigi's Mansion. We'll pencil in another game club for October.
That'd be fun. I love those games. I don't know really why I haven't online. Played the third one, but yeah.
Yeah, I've gotten a couple hours into it several times.
Yeah. I don't even own it.
So bringing up, this is the vgsales.fandom.com. So I'm not going to rely on it totally, but I know Origami King crossed 3 million. Super Paper Mario, according to this, sold over 4 million and is the highest selling Paper Mario game. Thousand Year Door is after Sticker Star. The order of, at least according to this, is Super Paper Mario is over 4 million. Origami King's over 3. Sticker Star is just shy of 2.5. Thousand Year Door is just shy of 2. Paper Mario 64 is a little under 1.5 million. And Color Splash is under less than a million. Which I remember when I did like the Switch bump thing. And I remember I could find no exact number for Color Splash. Because I think it makes sense. It did not sell well.
Yeah. Beautiful game.
Yeah. Yeah. It is good, actually.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to some listener mail. We will, if you want to send in your Majora's Mask commentary, I think we're doing it next week now.
Yeah, I guess we never addressed that.
Yeah.
In the show.
Yeah.
We pushed it back because none of us had time to play it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we also have less of a crunch to do the whole 3D Zelda game club before Breath of the Wild 2 because it is now coming out next year.
Yes.
And I think after we do Majora's Mask, we might kind of give it a little time to see if Wind Waker is getting ported to Switch because that would be convenient to do it along when that comes out as opposed to, you know, doing it like 2 months before it gets announced.
Yeah,
but we will keep up doing Zelda related things. It might give us an opportunity to, like, you know, play some Link's Crossbow Training, maybe mess around with Phantom Hourglass or Spirit Tracks. I'd be down for that. But let's get to this listener mail from Vincent, who says, "Howdy, y'all! I totally missed out of the PS1 era of Square RPGs, but I've noticed many of their heavy hitters are on Switch, like Final Fantasy VII, VIII, and IX, plus Legend of Mana and Chrono Cross. I think I have bandwidth for one Square PS1 RPG. Which would you recommend as the one to play? I'm pretty familiar with Square RPGs on both sides of the PS1, Super Nintendo, PS2, plus DS, just not the PS1 era itself. Thanks, keep up the good work. P.S. Circle of the Moon was very good for 2001, especially for Nintendo players who didn't have PS1 and TG16 CD and suffered through the N64 Castlevanias. We went from the Dracula X SNES port to a full-blown Metroidvania," which I'll point out, Vincent, that's an astute point about Circle of the Moon on GBA.
Yeah. No,
like,
I
in 2001,
I read that and I was like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was a revelation in 2001.
Yeah,
because I was definitely of that ilk. I didn't actually play Circle of the Moon when it came out on GBA because I didn't feel like playing a game sitting under a desk lamp when the system launched. But I definitely did have that experience because I didn't play Symphony of the Night until Xbox 360. But I certainly played those crappy Castlevania 64 games.
Me too.
So that probably would have been revelatory had I played it at the time.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm the person to answer anything about Square PS1 RPGs.
And I really felt like that question was directed at me. But I mean, if you want to start, I mean, I suppose you can.
My very obvious answer is Chrono Cross. For a few reasons in that I don't think a lot of RPGs like Chrono Cross exist anymore. Whereas I could point to some of those Final Fantasy games and, like, there are RPGs that are still kind of modeled after Final Fantasy. Legend of Mana is very good, but I think if it's just one, it's Chrono Cross. But Legend of Mana is very good. Saga Frontier is okay. There's a lot of good PS1 RPGs. I did want to take this time because we are to the point where I'm just, like, sitting back and enjoying life because the PS1 RPG that I had asked for the past decade is now out on Switch with Chrono Cross.
Yeah, Neil's retiring from games journalism because, like, he did it.
There was part of me that it's like, should I just stop reviewing games after Chrono Cross?
Yeah.
I've been wanting this for years. So I would imagine that Square is going to keep on, you know, porting old PS1 RPGs. I mean, they're starting to, there's not as many left because they brought over a ton of them. Maybe we'll start seeing PS2 games come to Switch. That'd be fun. But I put together a short list. Not all of them are Square games, but they're just PS1 JRPGs that are currently not available on Switch that I think would be cool. First and foremost is Xenogears, for obvious reasons, because it is from Tetsuya Takahashi, the head of Monolith, who, you know, they make all the Xenoblade games. I actually, back on the Thirsty Mage, we did a Game Club episode for Xenogears. I did not enjoy playing it, but I can tell you how I would enjoy Xenogears is if it had those like the boost options of like speeding up the gameplay or like auto winning the battles, because the story of Xenogears is the best part of it. So much so that they ran out of money and the second disc of that game is essentially just like a visual novel. But it would be cool for historical purposes, because I mean, Xenogears has only been available on PS1 and maybe PC, and you know, the people who made that game are like, a lot of it's not directly connected to Xenoblade, but there's definitely a lot of, you know, that the same thought carries over the years into all of Takahashi's games.
It's got that same cross-shaped coffin thingy in all of his games that I can't think of the name of. And I guess Xenoblade 3 already in the trailers has references to it, which has started the theory crafting a rolling.
I love it. You got to get on that, buddy.
I should probably play. Well, if they port it to, I haven't played, I own Xenosaga 1 and 2 and have played the tutorial of Xenosaga.
And those games are very long.
Yes, I did watch the anime adaptation of Xenosaga, and I'll probably wind up watching the cutscenes of the other ones at some point, because if I'm honest with myself, I'll never actually play them, but I like having them on the shelf.
I don't know if I would recommend you ever play them.
No, they're 100% not my kind of game at all, but I respect that they are relevant to a series that I adore.
Yeah, and I'll kind of go through the rest of the game, because I think Xenogears is the one that, like, if I had to point to one just because of the fact that it does kind of tie into, you know, Nintendo's first party, one of their first party releases for this year. But just a couple other, Threads of Fate, which is a game that I have not played that much. It is like a cutesy action RPG that came out, I think, around the same time as Chrono Cross. But it's a weird game. The music's pretty good from what I remember. Vagrant Story, which is a Matsuno game. He did Final Fantasy Tactics, which also the next game in the list, Final Fantasy Tactics, which there's rumors that might be getting remastered. But like, just give me your good tactical RPGs. That sounds good. And then for PS1 RPGs that aren't Square RPGs, that would be cool to see Jade Cocoon, which is like a weirdo Pokemon fusion game that I just remember playing a lot when I was younger. I don't know if it's good. I just played it a lot. And then Suikoden 2, which is a game that I have not really played that much, but people talk about it like it's one of the best RPGs ever made. And Ayudin Chronicles, which has its like Town Sim spinoff coming out on Switch in May. That was the Kickstarter game from a lot of the original developers behind Suikoden that is coming out sometime in the nebulous future on Nintendo Switch.
I definitely, when you said Ayudin, however that's said, I definitely at first thought you were saying Ayudin Chronicles, that N64.
No.
And I was like, whoa, what? Like, that's, we're requesting that for Switch? but we're good. I'm all caught up now.
Yeah.
Do we want to mention, you mentioned we got some new Genesis games, which included some RPGs that would also be worth trying on Switch.
Yeah, the Genesis update, what was it, Space Harrier 2, which I don't know, sure. Sonic Spinball, But the real winner from the Genesis NSO update is Shining Force 2.
Yeah, it's a great game.
I don't think I've ever played the second one. I think I only played through the first one.
It's, I think it's probably overall better. I don't have as much nostalgia for it because I didn't play it until way later. I do feel like it isn't, the first one does a really good job of the characters it gives you at the start are a perfect little party that has a lot of variety for, like, you get a healer and a magic user and a and essentially two ranged units and two close range units from the moment the game starts. The second one is a lot more stingy with its characters. And so the first few battles can be kind of tough if you don't know what you're doing. But I am noticing playing through it on Switch how much of the, like, Camelot Golden Sun isms started here. Like, a lot of just, like, the way they animate, like, you know how when characters are talking in Golden Sun, they'll kind of, like, the sprites will kind of squish and wiggle while they talk? That is from this game. Like, all of the weird little things they do with sprite animation is from Shining Force 2, and it's so weird to play because it's like, oh yeah, this is starting to look like what I associate these people's games with looking like, which is very weird, but it's a great game. Both of them are.
Yeah.
And they should put Sega CD onto NSO so they can put Shining Force CD and Shining Force 3 on there as well.
That would be awesome, because those games are not easy to find.
No, and they are hundreds of dollars.
Yes.
Yeah. Very not accessible games.
Yep. Yeah, I think that'll do it for this week's episode of Connectivity. We had our little Genesis minute at the end. I guess if you're looking for a PS1-like RPG, or rather, I mean, not a Square one, but Phantasy Star 4 on Nintendo Switch Online, a game that one of these days I will play, who knows when.
Have you played any of it?
I played the beginning of it years ago.
Okay. I was going to say, because I played it as a kid because it was on Sega Smash Pack for the Sega Dreamcast.
Hey, yeah, I remember those.
And so I'm like, there is a possibility that I've played more of that game than you have, which is deeply funny to me.
I got to the point with Phantasy Star where I was like, I'm going to play them from the first one. And I played through, this is back the Sega Ages one. I played through the first one. And that Sega Ages port of Phantasy Star 1 is awesome. And then I started playing 2 and was like, nope. And stopped. And then when NSO, when they announced the Genesis lineup, and they're like, oh, Phantasy Star 4 is going to be there, and I was like, I should just play the one that people are like, it's as good as Final Fantasy 6.
Yeah.
Which, like, yeah, I've heard that from enough people that, like, I don't doubt it. I just need to sit down and, like, earnestly play that game. Because I did enjoy when I messed around with it, because I want to say it might have been, like, Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection. Like, it was one of those collections that I played a couple hours of it. And then just faded off it because it was in a collection with 50 other games.
Right.
But yeah, I need to sit down and play that game.
Well, okay. Send us emails about Majora's Mask.
Yeah. Connectivity@IntendoReport.com. You can hit us up on the Twitters at ConnectivityNWR. And we'll be back next week to talk about Majora's Mask. Unless we're met with a terrible fate. Then we'll talk about Majora's Mask next week. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye. This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.